Thanks for joining in tonight. Wherever you're coming from. Whatever state you're in. I hope this finds you well. Take a second to just pause. At any point, and appreciate yourself. You can do that. Can hear this music, it's reminding me of a waterfall. Can you imagine yourself standing under a waterfall, letting it wash over you? Or that feeling of raindrops hitting your skin. Every day we go through so much in our lives. And we've got to take some time to reset, recalibrate, wash all of that off. Whether you want to call it clearing your nervous system, resetting your soul, just refreshing yourself. Thank you. You know how there's physical hygiene, like brushing your teeth and washing your face, but there's also emotional hygiene and mental hygiene and movement hygiene, where you can clear out yourself at the end of the day, get ready for dream time, wind down like a clock going to sleep for the night. It's amazing how excited our bodies can get and worked up, whether we're working on a book report for school, getting pumped up for a soccer game, worried about our next dentist appointment, or what we're going to get our mom for birthday, her birthday. Whatever it is, it can get us quite worked up, and winding down planting your feet on the ground, one foot and the next, putting your hands right on your legs. Can you say hello to your legs? Inhaling and exhaling, tuning into your breath. Your breath is a powerful source of calm and knowledge and just information about how am I, how are you breathing right now? As we move into reading our book out loud, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, remember just how powerful your imagination is. This book is going to take us through so many layers of imagination. And just an ordinary person wrote it by using his imagination. C.S. Lewis wrote this book. Can you give me a thumbs up? Is the music soft enough to hear while I read, or is it still too loud? It's good? Okay. So kick back. Going to go on an audio book journey of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. My dad read this to me when I was, I think, 7 or 8 or 9. He read me all of the books. I've got all of them figure in this set right back there. So, C.S. Lewis writes, "My dear Lucy, I wrote this story for you. But when I began it, I had not realized that girls grow quicker than books. As a result, you are already too old for fairy tales, such as this book is. And by the time it is printed and bound, you will be older still. But someday, you will be old enough to start reading fairy tales again. You can then take it down from some upper shelf, dust it off, and tell me what you think of it. I'd so like to know. I shall, however, probably be too deaf to hear and too old to understand a word you say, but I shall still be. Your affectionate godfather, C.S. Lewis." Chapter 1. Lucy looks into the wardrobe. Once there were four children whose names were Peter, Susan, Edmund, and Lucy. This story is about something that happened to them when they were sent away from London during the war, World War II, because of the air raids. They were sent to the house of an old professor who lived in the heart of the country, 10 miles from the nearest railway station and 2 miles from the nearest post office. He had no wife, and he lived in a very large house with a housekeeper called Mrs. McCready and 3 servants. He himself was a very old man with shaggy white hair, which grew over most of his face as well as on his head, and they liked him almost at once. But on the first evening, when he came out to a meeting to meet them at the front door, he was so odd looking that Lucy, who was the youngest, was a little afraid of him. And Edmund, who was the next youngest, wanted to laugh and had to keep pretending he was blowing his nose to hide it. As soon as they had said goodnight to the professor and had gone upstairs on the first night, the boys came into the girls' room and they all talked it over. "We've fallen on our feet, make no mistake," said Peter. "That old chap won't do anything to us." "I think he's an old dear," said Susan. "Oh, come off it," said Edmund, who was tired and pretending not to be tired, which always made him bad-tempered. "Don't go on talking like that." "Like what?" Susan said. "And anyway, it's time you were in bed." "Try talking like mother," said Edmund. "And who are you to say when I'm to go to bed? Go to bed yourself." "Hadn't we all better go to bed?" said Lucy. "There's sure to be a row if we're heard talking here." "No, there won't," said Peter. "I tell you, this is the sort of house where no one's going to mind what we do. Anyway, they won't hear us. It's about 10 minutes' walk down from here to the dining room, and any amount of stairs and passages in between." "What's the noise?" Lucy said suddenly. It was a far larger house than she had ever been in before, and the thought of all those long passages and rows of doors leading into empty rooms was beginning to make her feel a little creepy. "It's only a bird," said Edmund. "It's an owl," said Peter. "This is going to be a wonderful place for birds." Peter loved birds. "I shall go to bed now. I say, let's go exploring tomorrow. You might find anything in a place like this. Did you see those mountains as we come along? And the woods? There might be eagles. There might be stags. There'll be hawks, badgers, snakes, foxes." And when the next morning came, there was a steady rain falling. So thick that when you looked out the window, you could see neither the mountains nor the woods, nor even the stream in the garden. Of course it would be raining, said Edmund. It was only their second day and it was already awful. Do stop grumbling, Ed, said Susan. 10 to 1, it'll clear up in the next hour or so. And in the meantime, we're pretty well off. There's a wireless and lots of books. Everyone agreed, and that was how their adventures began. It was just the sort of house that you could never seem to come to the end of. It was full of unexpected places. The first doors they tried led only to spare bedrooms, as everyone had expected that they would. But soon they came to a very long room full of pictures, and there they found a suit of armor. And after that, there was a room all hung with green, with a harp in one corner, and then came 3 steps down and 5 steps up, and a kind of little upstairs hall and a door that led out onto a balcony. A whole series of rooms which led into one another and were lined with books. Most of them old books, some of them bigger than our hymnal in church. And shortly after, they looked into a room that was quite empty, except for one big wardrobe that was sort of a looking glass in the door of the wardrobe. There was nothing else in that room except for a blue bottle on the windowsill. Nothing there, said Peter. Everyone trooped out of the room except for Lucy. She stayed behind because she thought it would be worth trying to open the door to the wardrobe, even though she was almost sure that it would be locked. To her surprise, it actually opened pretty easily, and 2 mothballs dropped out. Looking inside the wardrobe, she saw mostly fur coats. There was nothing that Lucy liked so much as the smell and feel of fur. So warm, so much reminiscent of the forest. Lucy immediately stepped into the wardrobe, got among the coats, and rubbed her face against them, leaving the door open, of course, because she knew she didn't want to get shut inside the wardrobe. Soon she went further in and found that there was a second row of coats hanging up behind the first one. It was almost quite dark in there, and she kept her arms stretched out in front of her so she wouldn't bump in to the edge of the wardrobe. She kept walking backwards, step, 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 waiting to feel the back of the wardrobe, and she couldn't feel it. This must simply be an enormous wardrobe, thought Lucy, still going further in and pushing the soft folds of the coat aside. Then she noticed that there was something crunching beneath her feet. Is this more mothballs? She thought, stooping down to feel it with her hands. But instead of feeling the warm, hard, smooth wood, she felt something soft and powdery and cold. This is rather odd, she said, and went a step or two further. Next moment, she found that what she was rubbing against her hands and her face was no longer soft fur, but something hard and rough and even prickly. Why, this is just like the branches of a tree, exclaimed Lucy. And then she saw that there was light in front of her, not a few inches away where the back of the wardrobe ought to have been. Something cold was falling and soft. A moment later, she found that she was standing in the middle of a wood at nighttime with snow under her and snowflakes falling through the air. Lucy felt a little frightened, but she also felt inquisitive and excited. She looked back over her shoulder, and there between the dark tree trunks, she could still see the open door of the wardrobe, and even catch a glimpse of that empty room from where she had come. It seemed to be still daylight over there in that empty room. "Well, I can always go back if something goes wrong," said Lucy. And she began to walk forward. Crunch, crunch. Over the snow and through the woods towards the other light. In about 10 minutes, she reached it and found that it was a lamp post. As she stood looking at it, wondering why there was a lamp post in the middle of a wood and wondering what to do next, she heard a pitter-patter of feet. Coming right toward her. And soon after that, a very strange person indeed stepped out from the trees into the lamp post light. He was only a little taller than Lucy herself, and he carried over his head an umbrella, white with snow. From the waist upwards, he was like a man, but his legs were shaped like a goat's, and hair on them was glossy black. And instead of feet, he had goat's hooves. He had a tail, but Lucy did not notice this at first because it was so neatly caught up over the arm that held the umbrella, to keep it from trailing in the snow, of course. He had a red woolen muffler around his neck, and his skin was rather reddish too. He had a strange but pleasant little face with a short pointed beard and curly hair. And out of the hair, there stuck two horns, one on each side of his forehead. One of his hands, as I have said, held the umbrella. In the other arm, he carried several brown parcels, or packages. What with the parcels and the snow, it looked just as if he had been doing his Christmas shopping. He was a fawn. And when he saw Lucy, he gave such a start of surprise that he dropped all his parcels. "Goodness gracious me!" exclaimed the fawn. "Well, good evening," said Lucy. But the fawn was so busy picking up his parcels that at first he did not reply. When he had finished, he made her a little bow. Good evening," said the fawn. "Excuse me. I don't want to be inquisitive, but should I be right in thinking that you are the daughter of Eve?" "My name's Lucy," she said, not quite understanding him. "And you are, forgive me, you are what they call a girl?" asked the fawn. Lucy said, "Of course I'm a girl." The fawn clarified, "You are, in fact, human," the fawn said. Lucy, a little puzzled, said, "Of course I'm human." To be sure," said the fawn. "How stupid of me. But I have never before seen a son of Adam or a daughter of Eve. And I am delighted. That is to say," and then he stopped as if he was going to say something he had not intended but had remembered in time. "Delighted, delighted," he went on. "Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Tumnus." "I'm so very pleased to meet you, Mr. Tumnus," said Lucy. "And may I ask, oh Lucy, daughter of Eve," said Mr. Tumnus, "how have you come into Narnia?" "Narnia? What's that?" "This is the land of Narnia," said the fawn, "where we are now. All that lies between the lamppost and the great castle of Caer Paravel on the eastern sea. And you have come from the wild woods of the west. I got in through a wardrobe in the spare room. Ah, said Mr. Tumnus in a rather melancholy voice. If I had only worked harder at geography when I was a little fawn, I should no doubt know all about those strange countries. It's too late now. But there aren't countries at all, said Lucy. It's only just back there, at least. I'm not sure. It's summer there. Meanwhile, it's winter in Narnia, and has been for a very, very long time. We shall both catch a cold if we stand here talking in the snow. Daughter of Eve, from the far land of Spare where eternal sun reigns around the bright city of Wardrobe, how would it be if you came and had tea with me? Thank you very much, Mr. Tumnus, said Lucy. But I was wondering whether I ought to be getting back. It's only just around the corner, said the fawn. There'll be a roaring fire and toast and sardines. If you take my arm, daughter of Eve, I shall be able to hold the umbrella over both of us. That's the way. Now off we go. And so Lucy found herself walking through the wood, arm in arm with this strange creature, as if they had known one another all their lives. They had not gone far before they came to a place where the ground became rough, and there were rocks all about, and little hills up and little hills down. At the bottom of one small valley, Mr. Tumnus turned suddenly aside as if he were going to walk straight into an unusually large rock. But at the last moment, Lucy found he was leading her into the entrance of a cave. As soon as they were inside, she found herself blinking in the light of a wood fire. Then Mr. Tumnus stopped and took a flaming piece of wood out of the fire with a neat little pair of tongs and lit a lamp. Now we shan't be long, he said, and immediately put a kettle on. Lucy thought she had never been in a nicer place. It was a little dry, clean cave of reddish stone with a carpet on the floor and two little chairs, one for me and one for a friend, said Mr. Tumnus. In one corner there was a door which Lucy thought must lead to the bedroom of Mr. Tumnus, and on one wall there was a shelf full of books. Lucy looked at these things as he was setting the tea out. Their titles like The Life and Letters of Silenus, or Nymphs and Their Way, or Men, Monks and Gamekeepers, A Study in Popular Legend, or Is Man a Myth? Now, daughter of Eve, it really was a wonderful tea. There was a little nice brown egg, lightly boiled, for each of them, with sardines and toast and butter and honey and a sugar-topped cake. And when Lucy was tired of eating, the fawn began to talk. That's all for tonight from reading from book one of the Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Thank you for tuning in to our first read aloud on KESUC. Hope you were able to wind down, get ready for bed, and dive into your imagination a little bit deeper.